This morning we continue with our series, Welcoming Doubt, Building Faith, and take a stop this morning with the topic of a violent world in need of God. Our first reading comes from the 77th Psalm, a song of yearning to God in times of trouble. While this psalm was arguably written 2.5 millennia ago, it continues to speak to our time today. The reading begins. I cry aloud to God, that he may hear me. In the day of my trouble, I seek the Lord. In the night, my hand is stretched out without wearying. My soul refuses to be comforted. I think of God and I moan. I meditate and my spirit faints. You keep my eyelids from closing. I am so troubled that I cannot speak. I consider the days of old and remember the years of long ago. I commune with my heart in the night. I meditate and search my spirit. Will the Lord spurn forever and never again be favorable? Has his steadfast love ceased forever? Are his promises at an end for all time? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he in anger shut up his compassion? And I say, it is my grief that the right hand of the Most High has changed. The second reading comes from an apocalyptic section found in Matthew's Gospel. All the Gospels and other related writings of the time contain references to violence and war. This morning we ponder Matthew's version of war and destruction. As Jesus came out of the temple and was going away, his disciples came to point out to him the buildings of the temple. Then he asked them, "You see all these, do you not? Truly, I tell you, not one stone will be left here upon another. All will be blown away." When he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, "Tell us, when will this be, and what will be the sign of your coming and at the end of the age?" Jesus answered them, "Beware that no one leads you astray, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Messiah,' and they will lead many astray. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not alarmed, for this must take place, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All this is but the beginning of the birth pangs." Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God.
I remember that wonderful day. I was in our mudroom sorting laundry, and I came across some baby clothes. We were a young couple. We didn't have any children, and it didn't really make sense for me at the time. Until I looked at the corner of my eye and I saw Jennifer elated, excited, and she said, "Congratulations, we're going to be parents." We very quickly booked an appointment to go and see the doctor and learn what was ahead, and I very quickly was pleased that I wasn't the one tasked with birthing or carrying the child. Process included things like morning sickness, aches and pains, risks to the child, high blood pressure, dietary regulations, and there was that ever-looming reality that has touched so many's lives of miscarriage. Fear sunk in. The reality of what was ahead sunk in. In the months ahead, we read books, we took a course, we learned all about the birthing process. We learned about labor pains. We learned about surgical interventions. We learned about the pain and the suffering that may lie ahead. And very quickly, what was beginning as excitement and joy very quickly turned into a profound sense of fear. It's kind of an odd reality, isn't it? That we look forward to this wonderful, miraculous birth, yet we also are surrounded by such an essence of fear and uncertainty. It's Scholar N.T. Wright says that in his book, The Commentary on the Gospel of Matthew, he says that the greatest image of God's future is the birth of a child. Jesus concludes the text that Gwen wrote, saying, "All this is but the beginning of the birth pangs." This Saturday will be Remembrance Day. 98 years ago, at the very end of World War I, at the 11th hour, the 11th day of the 11th month, the birth pangs had been felt profoundly throughout the world. And ever since that time, we have kind of lived into that reality. We have stood silently, but we have not stood passively. We have stood quietly, but we have not stood submissively. We have stood without sound, but we have not stood without action. We have stood in an act of remembrance, bringing into memory, holding in our memory the unthinkable. The unthinkable pains of war that humans could do against other humans, and praying that they would never, ever happen again. And this Saturday, we will gather in cenotaphs in our communities. We will gather at our television and watch the service in Ottawa, perhaps. And this day, the Sunday before Remembrance Day, the church gathers for what we call Remembrance Sunday, a Christian exploration of what this reality means in our faith context. I was thinking this week that the timing is very interesting for us to have Remembrance Sunday now, isn't it? Because we are almost an entire week away from Remembrance Day, aren't we? 6 whole days away. We almost could hold this service next Sunday, but we would, of course, be a day late. But next weekend, we'll have that Remembrance Day sort of feel, won't it? I wonder if this time that we've been given, these 6 days that lie ahead of us, are really for us a call for us to ponder, a call for us to ponder what the Christian response to this reality in our world is. How is it that we will prepare for Remembrance Day this Saturday? How is it that we will live into it in our lives, in our being, in our communities, in our faith? I chose to have this focus this day because this is one of the faith pondering questions that was raised by many of us when we talked about the Doubting Thomas way back in the spring. This was one of the profound questions that seemed to be repeated over and over in people's responses. What is going on in our world with all of the violence and all the uprisings? What is happening? What is with this violent world that is so in need of God? I appreciated the integrity and the honesty of people's questions because it is one that I share as well. And I think it mirrors the 77th Psalm that Gwen read first for us this morning. Israel had been devastated by the warring Babylonians. Babylonians had destroyed their homes, their community, their temple. Everything was in rubble. Many of them had been carted off and lived as slaves. The generations of birth pangs had been felt for the Israelites. It had happened from the Egyptians, by the Assyrians, and now by the Babylonians. And the psalmist writes these words that speak to the challenge, to the deep pains that they were feeling. Has the Lord's love ceased forever? Are the Lord's promises at an end for all time? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has God in anger shut up compassion? think it speaks to that deep, profound fear that many of us feel, especially at a week like this. That deep, profound fear that we are alone, that God is absent, that God has stopped speaking. Along with many of you, I suspect you've heard different veterans speak of the terrors of war when they have shared their experiences, speaking about what it was like to be fired upon, what it was like to lose a limb in battle, what it was like to lose your faith. They felt alone. They felt fear and trembling, and who couldn't relate to those realities, and who of us can't relate to this psalm as we embrace this week? World War I was to be the war to end all wars, but another came, and so many of us worry about a third. In the meantime, we live with far-off countries, war-torn apart, divisions. And closer to home, we see violent individuals possessing powerful weapons wreaking bloodshed in their wake. And we ask, where is that world going? When will this ever end? Is God silent? Has God stopped speaking? The gospel text that Gwen read comes from a genre of literature we call apocalyptic literature. We see it sprinkled through the Gospels. We see it certainly in the book of Revelations and in some of the Old Testament lections as well. And apocalyptic literature contains the hopes and the visions of God's restored future, the end of suffering and pain and evil, and the beginning of God's kingdom to be birthed. Their experience for the early followers, the early Christians, was of having the deadly powers of Rome dominate them. Their collective experience was all the way back to Egypt and Assyria and Babylon, and now Rome dominating them. Power and force. Their experience was that of bloodshed. Their experience were that of being overpowered. And they prayed that one day something even more powerful would come that would bring peace. From what they've seen, might makes right. Might makes a peace. And Jesus said, all this is but the beginning of the birth pangs. I wonder when I hear that, I wonder if Jesus was warning them of the death and the destruction and the devastation that will inevitably occur when force is applied against force. These are the signs of the ways of evil and devastation that inevitably occur when forces battle against other forces. Yet one day God's kingdom, Jesus taught, would birth into this world. And just as we prepare for a birth, we also prepare for the birth of the kingdom. For us to speak now of this in-between time of living in this is how we are called to prepare. I'd like for us during the last little bit of our reflection time to just provoke our thinking into this coming week, really into our lives as Christians, how it is that we prepare to live amidst these birth pangs. One way that I think we're called to prepare is to truly acknowledge one another as children of God. We are increasingly living in such a diverse culture. We live in times of profound division and indeed fear of the other. And in this culture, I think it is incumbent more than ever for us to find ways to never be isolated or separated or divided from other people. The function of war is that it dehumanizes us from the other. It isolates us from the other so that we can allow such atrocities to occur. In Antony Beaver's book, Berlin, The Downfall of 1945, He writes about the propaganda that was used between the Russians and the Germans, and the Germans against the Russians. And he writes about how that allowed such horrible things to occur. And he says this towards the end of his book. One of the most unintentionally revealing remarks was made by a Russian general, General Maslov. He described German children crying as they were searching desperately for their parents in a blazing town. What was surprising was that they were crying in exactly the same way that our children cry. Propaganda in the past had taught them that those Russians were inhumane beasts and vice versa, that the Germans were inhumane beasts and they hated one another. That propaganda had dehumanized them against the other and allowed such atrocities to begin, and it took the tears of a child to realize that indeed they were brothers and sisters. Closer to home, we've heard accounts of humiliation and torture in far-off countries, prisoners of war in Iraq and Afghanistan, but they're not confined to far-off places and lands either, are they? I sometimes think this continues today with some of the media accounts that we read about the unsubstantiated reports about Islam. I'm sure you as well, have been doing a lot of wondering about Quebec and the introduction of Bill 62, requirement of women that wear the niqab or wear the burqa to uncover their face in order to receive public services. We wonder about how we will find common ways to be together as children of God. This afternoon, we're delighted to welcome a very special man. Our guest minister is going to be our guest liturgist for Jazz Vespers. His name is Reverend Dr. Gary Patterson. He's an amazing minister. He's had quite a career over many decades. He just recently retired, served my family at the loss of my father. He served so many people in so many levels of the church. He was a previous moderator, as many of you might know. And interestingly, he was the very first gay man that was elected to the position of moderator, the spiritual head of our United Church. And it's interesting, going back to 1988, when we changed that policy. Previously, the United Church had a policy that discriminated against people's sexual orientation, barring them from ordination in the ministry. If the United Church had not changed that policy back in 88, Gary never would have been ordained. He may have never become the moderator, and he may never have been able to bless the church the way that he so deeply and richly did. History is filled with examples of inhumane treatments of the other. Inhumane treatments of the other. There's a modern-day mystic, if you will, Thomas Merton, a Catholic monk in the States, who wrote some profound books. One book he wrote is entitled On Peace, and in that book he talks a bit about the way that the German death camp Auschwitz was allowed to occur. And he said, for Auschwitz to occur, really only one basic principle needed to occur. Anyone of a certain class or certain nation or a certain race would be designed to be bad or evil, and everything will follow on that basis. Merton went on to write in his book, as long as this principle is easily available, as long as it is taken for granted, as long as it can be spread out on the front pages at a moment's notice and accepted by all, then we have no need of monsters. Ordinary police and good citizens will take care of everything. Accepting caricatures of inhumanity can too easily turn ordinary people inhuman. So as we continue in the times of birth pangs, as we walk into this week leading us to Remembrance Day, may we be aware of the birth pangs and indeed mourn deeply their presence. But may we also actively prepare for God's birthing in the world. May we see the light in the other. May we see a child of God in the other. May we live through these birth pangs knowing that God is indeed birthing in God's time. Amen.